On this episode of Practical Guidance Podcast, Labor and Employment Series, we hear from attorney Eric Gregory. Eric is a partner within the Labor and Employment Group at Dickinson Wright. Eric's practice is focused primarily in the areas of ERISA, employee benefits, and executive compensation. Eric advises clients on all aspects of employee benefits, including qualified retirement plans, welfare plans, and non-qualified compensation programs. I spoke with Eric recently about the Dobbs decision and its impact on employee benefit issues. For the listeners out there interested in the topic and related ERISA issues, you should visit Practical Guidance and check out some of the related articles penned by Eric. You'll find some links in the podcast notes to this episode. I'm your host, Kevin Hilton. I'm an attorney with LexisNexis. To learn more about LexisNexis' practical guidance research solutions, visit Lexis.com. Lexis' practical guidance gives you insights to support what you do. Eric, thanks so much for your time and for speaking with me today for the Practical Guidance Podcast. I wonder if you could just start by telling me a little bit about your practice at Dickinson Wright.
So I'm an employee benefits and executive compensation lawyer, and I practice just outside of Detroit in Troy, Michigan. So I help translate for employers the rules under ERISA and the Internal Revenue Code for retirement plans, health plans, and executive compensation plans to help employers set those plans up and to help protect employers from liability.
So today we're going to talk about the Dobbs case in context of employee benefits. And from what I understand, Dobbs has had an impact on I know Dobbs has had an impact on access to legal abortion in multiple states and will have a further impact down the road. And I think as a ripple effect, I'm understanding that there are a lot of changes and issues that corporations are having to address regarding their interplay with their employees in light of this decision. So I wonder if you could give readers some context on this from the side of your practice area.
Yeah, there's no question that Dobbs has had a huge impact on employee benefits that are provided by employers. And to step back for a second, I should probably give just a quick synopsis of the decision and what it means for employers. And in short, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in Dobbs that the 14th Amendment does not protect an individual's right to obtain an abortion, which had been the ruling under Roe v. Wade. So Dobbs, as a result, doesn't outlaw abortion, but it permits states to enforce laws that either prohibit abortion or prohibit access to abortion in certain circumstances. So that means that as a result of Dobbs, that there are some states that have outright banned abortion. Some states are about to ban it or are likely to ban it. Some states, like in the state of Michigan, the law is in flux. And in some states, there are already legal protections that are put in place for abortion. And so this has meant that employers have reacted in widely different ways to this decision and its impact on its employees and how it provides benefits under their plans. Some employers have talked openly and frankly about what abortion benefits are going to be available under their plans. Other employers are kind of stepping back and thinking about how things are going to shake out and just seeing what's going to happen. But no matter what, though, participants that participate in an employer-sponsored medical plan are starting to ask questions about abortion coverage. So it's really important for employers to engage with their benefits counsel and think through what kinds of benefits it wants to make available under its plan and think through what kinds of benefits it's permitted to make available under its plan.
That all makes sense. And I guess the fact that it essentially sending this all back to the states makes it extraordinarily complicated for any company that's operating across multiple states. And so how are you advising people, corporations then to go about looking at their plans? I'm guessing it has a lot to do with the states that they're operating within.
Yeah, it absolutely has to do with what states they're operating in. And a big part of that analysis is understanding the relationship between state law and ERISA.
Okay.
So again, as I mentioned, some states have these laws that prohibit abortion. Some states have criminal laws that prohibit abortion, and some states have civil laws that prohibit abortion. So some of these states have criminal laws that only apply to the abortion providers. So that means really, like in Michigan, our law only provides that a actual doctor that performs an abortion could be punished. There are some other states that tie in the concept of aiding and abetting into their criminal laws. So Texas has famously taken the position that anyone that aids or abets in the performance of an abortion in Texas could be criminally liable. So they famously sent lawmakers in Texas, I should say, famously sent a letter to a law firm that has operations in Texas and told them that they think that someone may have obtained an abortion under their plan and they could be subject to criminal laws. So Texas is taking a really aggressive stance with respect to how its criminal laws are being enforced. What happens when you have employees that live in a state that criminalizes abortion, or you have operations in a state that criminalize abortion, but that employee wants to go to a state that doesn't criminalize abortion? And, you know, does the employer is coming to me and says, you know, do we have liability in that circumstance? And that's where, in a lot of circumstances, ERISA comes in. So ERISA is the Employee Retirement Income Security Act of 1974, and it was put in place in part with the intention of promoting the uniformity of benefits administration across plans. And it has a preemption provision that says that it preempts any and all state laws insofar as they may now or hereinafter relate to any benefit plan. And that's a quote from Section 514A of ERISA. The scope of state laws that relate to an ERISA plan for purposes of Section 514A is expansive, but it's not completely unlimited. And a state law relates to an ERISA plan if it either references or has a connection with that plan. So a state law references ERISA if the existence of an ERISA plan is a critical factor in establishing liability, or a court has to interpret an ERISA's plan's terms to resolve a claim in relationship to that law. And the law is in connection with an ERISA plan if it directly affects the relationship between the employer, the plan, or eligible employees, or in some way interferes with plan administration or undercuts ERISA's purpose. So here in this situation, there's a plan sponsor in a state where abortion, who's illegal, who maintains a self-insured plan, meaning that they don't have an insurance policy, but they pay claims out of their general assets. And they have employees that go and obtain a legal abortion in a state that provides for abortions. There's a good argument that ERISA is going to preempt any civil liability because the ERISA plan is a critical factor in establishing the liability under the law. So that law is clearly in reference to ERISA. And there's a good argument that the law is impermissibly connected with ERISA in that it interferes with how an employer can provide coverage under an ERISA plan. So I think there's a really strong argument, certainly in the case of civil laws, that those right. laws should be preempted to the extent that they're provided under an ERISA plan.
When we get into criminal, how does that shift things?
Yeah, so that's a lot trickier yeah. because there ERISA has what's called a savings clause. And one of the things that's identified under the savings clause are generally applicable criminal laws. So by way of example, where this has been tested before has been the application of money laundering or stealing money from a pension plan. So if somebody steals money from a pension plan, they might argue, well, ERISA, you know, preempts this law because the place I stole the money from was a pension plan that's subject to ERISA. And the courts have said, no, that's a generally applicable criminal law. You can't steal money from another person, whether it's from an ERISA plan or somebody's bank account or anywhere else. So the courts have said, look, it makes sense that a generally applicable criminal law shouldn't be subject to ERISA preemption state should be permitted to go after someone that steals that money. Now, it's still an outstanding question at this point as to whether a state law that generally criminalizes abortion is a generally applicable law, particularly to the extent that it could apply to a benefits plan. Because, you know, for one, most of these laws don't directly apply to benefits plans. They apply to, they criminalize abortion from a provider perspective. And two, it's not clear that if the law was tailored specifically to apply to a benefits plan, that it could be within the generally applicable law standard. So I think the best answer, as far as we know or can tell right now, is that I think that criminal laws generally would also be preempted for a self-insured plan, but it's still a little bit unclear at this point. And I've talked about self-insured plans, and I want to make sure I also talk about the rules for insured plans. So
great.
Some employers, instead of self-funding their plan, maintain an insurance policy from an insurer. So generally, larger employers are going to self-insure, and smaller employers, because they don't want to take as big of a risk with related to claims, they're going to go out and get insurance. So ERISA does not preempt state laws that relate to insurance requirements. So to the extent that an employer is operating in a state and they have an insurance policy that's sitused in that state, that insurer is going to have to comply with the insurance laws that are applicable in that state. So if there are many states that, as part of their abortion prohibitions, also have a law that says insurance that's issued in this state or insurance that's sitused in this state cannot cover abortion or can only cover abortion in certain circumstances. And those employers that have insurance policies are going to have to comply with whatever that insurance issuer is permitted to provide in terms of coverage. It's unlikely also, I think, that an insurer that's located in a state where abortion is prohibited could have a rider to that policy that would cover abortion in a different state. But that's something that employers should definitely check with their insurer about if they've got an insured plan to make sure if they want to try to cover abortion, if they're located in a state that prohibits abortion, but they want to cover abortion in other states, they'll want to interface with their insurer to see if there's a way that they can help facilitate that coverage.
It's incredibly intricate. I mean, and I guess it's because we don't even realize how many landmines are potentially out there right now because they're just having, I know there's been a suit against Dick's Sporting Goods that has gotten some press over their decision to provide, I guess it was up to $4,000 in benefits to people who want to travel to illegal states to get an abortion for themselves or their partners. But there's not that much litigation, as I understand it, yet that's out there because it's all relatively new. I have to imagine that the pro-lifers, that at least that side, that there's going to be some attempt to go after ERISA and its applicability to provide like these like safe havens under self-insured plans, because that I could see that companies might start who are dedicated to providing access might switch to self-insured plans if it's financially feasible for them.
Yeah, and that's already sort of a trend, you know, notwithstanding any of the Dobbs decision. I mean, when I first started practicing 10 years ago, we only saw employers that really were at least over 1,000, maybe over 500 employees that would self-insure. But now we're seeing employers that are much smaller, like closer to 100. That are self-insuring.
Wow.
And there's a variety of financial considerations that are part of that. But this, you know, this may help tip the balance, you know, because it gives employers a lot more control as to what things they're going to cover under their plan or not. They're not necessarily restricted to what their insurer is, you know, willing to cover or not willing to cover. So this could be another edge pushing point that might cause an employer to consider being self-insured.
The trend has been smaller and smaller places have been going that direction. What has been the biggest impediment to going that direction? Is it cost primarily?
Yeah, it's all about how big, you know, any type of insurance from an economic standpoint, it's, right. You know, how big your risk pool is. So, yeah. You know, if you've got big claims coming from one person, but you only have 50 people in your plan, there's a much higher risk of having to fund a significant claims liability than if you have 10,000 people who are paying premiums into a plan, and then you know one person has high costs. Um, so So, you know, there are ways that employers can try to mitigate that with stop loss insurance and things
Okay.
that, or employees that employers that have, you know, younger employee populations, there's a lower risk that they'll look at. And they'll typically work with, you know, a benefits broker that will help them evaluate that economic analysis to determine whether it makes sense. But yeah, like I said, it's been smaller and smaller groups have made the decision to go self-insured in the last 10 years.
We just started to talk a little bit about travel benefits, and I think you mentioned, I mentioned the Dick's Sporting Goods case. Do you mind just talking a little bit about health travel benefits and how a little bit more about how some of these potential issues are at play?
Yeah, absolutely. So travel benefits has definitely been something that employers have looked at as one way to potentially continue to provide access to abortion to their employees. Some employers already have travel benefits as part of their health plan. Frequently, it's been put in place to help facilitate something like transplant benefits or access to centers of excellence for cancer treatments, so that if an employee lives, you know, outside of, you know, X mile radius of that particular treatment, that they'll provide the travel costs through the health plan so that employee can access those services. And for an employer that already has travel benefits in place, it's probably not that big of a compliance challenge to expand those travel benefits to include abortion. But for employers that are, you know, creating a travel benefit for the first time, there probably are some bigger compliance challenges in terms of considering how to facilitate that benefit and, you know, what kinds of benefits to cover as part of their travel benefit. So when an employer puts a travel benefit in as part of their health plan, one of the things they have to think about is the Mental Health Parity and Addiction Equity Act, which prohibits plans from applying limits or financial requirements on mental and behavioral health services that are not applied to medical or surgical services. So if an employer, for example, wanted to put an abortion travel benefit in place, and that was going to be the only travel benefit that was available under their plan, that and that plan also covers mental health benefits and is subject to the Mental Health Parity and Mental Health Parity and Addiction Equity Act. But they don't provide travel benefits for mental health or behavioral health services under those same conditions that the abortion benefits are provided under, that may in fact violate that act. And the penalties for violating that act are can be really extensive, which can include some level of restitution and it can include $100 per day per affected participant penalty.
Wow.
There's increased, unrelated to Dobbs, there's increased audit activity related to the Mental Health Parity Act from the Department of Labor that began in 2021. So that's definitely something that an employer is not going to want to violate, and will definitely want to talk with benefits counsel, their broker, in setting all that up so that there is access to mental and behavioral health services in the same way that the medical or surgical services, including abortion, are being provided under that travel benefit. So practically speaking, the easiest thing that I've seen employers do when they're putting one of those benefits in place is to put together a travel benefit that's neutral as to eligibility and somewhat neutral in terms of the types of services that are covered. So it's not a benefit that's only available to women. It's not a benefit that's only available with respect to abortion. But it's all kinds of medical and mental health and behavioral health services that aren't available within a certain radius of where an employee lives. So it might be subject to certain limits in terms of cost or things like that. But all of those rules in terms of who's eligible for the benefit and for what apply across the board for all types of those treatments. And if you set a benefit up like that, it's a lot more likely to be in compliance with the mental health parity rules than otherwise. Employers can also have different types of arrangements to set up a travel benefit. So they could have a travel component of their health plan, like I mentioned. They could also set up a health reimbursement arrangement, or HRA, or set it up through an employee assistance plan, or EAP. An HRA is just an unfunded benefit account that an employer can use to pay for medical expenses. Under the Affordable Care Act or ACA, an employer can't establish a standalone HRA, so it has to be tied into participation with the employer's full group health plan. So they can't just have an HRA that anybody can access. It has to be something that they can only access if they participate in the group health plan. That's
Does adding limited travel benefits trigger the EAP being impacted by the Affordable Care Act?
I think the best argument is that adding limited travel benefits for medical benefits probably doesn't cause that EAP to be subject to the Affordable Care Act, but that's something that we probably are going to be waiting some time for guidance under federal law. The last option I think that an employer has in terms of setting up a travel benefit is to do it completely outside of the group health plan and do it on a taxable basis. And you basically say to employees, we are going to have a travel benefit that's available to you. We are not going to require substantiation from you as to what you're using this travel benefit for. So you could really end up funding employee vacations or anything else, but you could set a limit that, you know, there's going to be travel benefits that are available to the employees. The advantage of setting it up that way is that if you're an employer in Texas or Oklahoma, you have no idea if your employees use that travel benefit to obtain an abortion, or if they use that benefit to take a vacation or go to a conference for professional development reasons. The disadvantage is that it's taxable to your employees, and employers are going to pay payroll and employment taxes on those payments to the employees. The other disadvantage is that it's not going to be preempted by ERISA. So there's and nothing under it necessarily would be protected by HIPAA. So there's some privacy issues that are there as well. I haven't seen an employer actually put one of these generalized travel benefits in place, but there's some definitely advantages to consider for an employer if you are located in a state that has taken a particularly aggressive stance with respect to going after employers that may help facilitate or aid or abet an abortion.
Essentially, that last option you're saying gives the ability for the employee and the employer to not really say anything about what's going on, utilize the resources, but the problem is also that potentially HIPAA won't protect any of that the information that would be disclosed. So that could be used ultimately against the employee who was utilizing that money towards getting an abortion out of state if they wanted to.
There would probably be no argument that HIPAA would apply because it's not part of a group health plan. So it's not protected health information under HIPAA. So to the extent that there is, you know, that how that money is used, you know, I probably could be potentially discoverable by somebody. So there's no argument that ERISA should apply either because it's not part of an ERISA plan. So that the preemption argument also goes out the window. The real advantage though is that, again, the employer really doesn't know anything about how that money is being spent.
So at least their culpability on it is nil. So it sounds like falling within the ERISA protection for the self-insured plans is at least at this moment, without any other decisions coming forward yet, seems to be the safest option if it is affordable for companies to give those options for legal abortion in other states. You got into a little bit there about HIPAA, and I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about how Dobbs is impacting HIPAA.
So privacy is definitely a critical issue for employers and employees as it relates to any health decisions that are being made, but certainly with respect to abortion. And so really shortly after the Dobbs decision, the Department of Health and Human Services issued some sub-regulatory guidance that talked about, you know, when HIPAA is applicable and when HIPAA is not applicable with respect to disclosures that might be required under a health plan. So, you know, I've had clients come to me and ask, what happens, you know, if we're in operations in Texas and a local sheriff shows up at one of our locations and says, abortion is illegal here, and we want a list of everybody under your group health plan that is obtained an abortion. And the HHS guidance says that an employer in that situation could tell that law enforcement official that they have to come back with a court order. And even if they do come back with a court order, that HHS guidance says that you are permitted but not required under HIPAA to comply with that court order. Now, an employer would be probably violating, definitely be violating an order of the court, presumably would be violating state law for not complying with that court order, but they're not doing anything to violate HIPAA by not complying with that court order for disclosure. So an employer would have to evaluate the risks and consequences of not complying with that court order or that state law, but under HIPAA, they're not required to disclose it. So I think it's worth it for employers to talk to whomever their designated privacy individuals are under HIPAA for their group health plan to make sure that they're up to date on what they're required to do and not required to do under HIPAA, and that they understand their HIPAA obligations, generally speaking, so that they know that protected health information that's obtained from the group health plan can't be used for any purposes other than administering that group health plan, so that information can't be used for employment purposes. We've had some employers that have had concerns that they have certain employees that would want to retaliate against employees that have obtained abortion. And so there are state law protections in many places against that. And also would be a violation of HIPAA for an employee to disclose an abortion that's obtained by another employee. So it's definitely something that employers want to pay attention to, but at least it was helpful for HHS to put out that guidance to remind employers that HIPAA protects this information, even if there's a law enforcement official out there who wants to obtain information about benefits that were provided under a group health plan.
Are there any federal regulatory decisions that are expected in light of this decision in this practice area that you're seeing?
Yeah, so in addition to that sub-regulatory guidance that came from HHS, I expect that there's going to be additional either regulatory or sub-regulatory guidance coming from IRS, Department of Labor, or other parts of the Biden administration. This could include guidance on whether or how the Department of Labor interprets the ERISA preemption provisions. It could include guidance from the IRS on whether EAPs can cover travel benefits without being subject to the Affordable Care Act. There might be guidance from the IRS that would allow plans to allow employees to make mid-year enrollment changes if they lose abortion access due to a state law change. There could be guidance on non-enforcement of mental health parity that I mentioned that would say that an employer could provide abortion travel services without being subject to mental health parity. Or there could be guidance from the administration on providing pre-deductible reimbursements to employees to the extent that an employee participates in a high deductible health plan and otherwise couldn't participate in a health savings account unless they had health insurance that required them to meet that high deductible. There's been some discussion that the Biden administration could say, well, that deductibility requirement is waived with respect to specific abortion benefits that are provided.
What should employers with multi-state plans be looking at right now?
So employers that have operations in multiple states have a lot of questions to ask themselves. Probably the most important of which is doing a census about where their employees are, where both they work and where they live. And those two things may not be the same as they were a couple of years ago due to the growth of remote work in the COVID-19 environment. So I have employers that were 100% in one state 2 years ago and now have employees in 35 different states suddenly. So that gives employers a huge spectrum of laws that they're going to have to analyze. But the first step, I think, is figuring out, what laws are potentially applicable to the healthcare services that our employees are going to obtain and, who's restricting abortion. Then once they've done that, I think it's categorizing those states into those that have banned abortion and those haven't, those who haven't, and those where the state's laws are in flux. And starting in 2023, California is actually going to start requiring that insured policies that are issued or delivered in the state of California cover abortion. So there's going to be another category of employers that are in states that, if they have an insured policy, actually require that they cover abortion. So there's just a lot of of data to sort of assemble before we can even start thinking about, you know, what we have to do. But once an employer has done that, they need to review their plan document and to determine whether their plan actually covers abortion or the circumstances in which it covers abortion. They should determine whether abortion drugs are covered in their plan and whether or not abortion drugs could be provided to employees in states where abortion drugs may not be available through mail and whether that's in compliance with those laws. Additionally, they have to review whether their plan has an exclusion for illegal services and to what extent that exclusion could be applicable. So a lot of plans will say, we'll cover everything, but here's the exclusions. And one of the exclusions is for any service that might be illegal where it's delivered. And so you'll have to figure out whether that impacts your ability to cover either abortion services or abortion drugs in certain states. And if the employer is self-insured, they should talk to, if they have a third-party claims administrator, they should talk to that claims administrator about what types of benefits it's going to be able to administer. And if they're insured, they should talk to their insurer to think about, you know, what kinds of ways are they handling abortion issues post-Dobbs. And some insurers and claims administrators are putting together plans to help employers administer travel benefits or benefits under an EAP for travel. So that could be another place that employers could lean on for administrative help in putting together something that's going to be maybe not necessarily compliant, because that's really what you should come to your attorney for, but something that's at least going to be manageable in terms of administration. Lastly, I think employers have to make decisions about what they want to cover and when they want to cover it. So if they're going to cover abortion, they want to decide, you know, what situations are they going to cover it in? Are they going to actually cover the medical procedure? Are they just going to cover travel to a place to obtain an abortion? And if they're going to make changes to their plan as to what they cover now versus what they want to cover, they want to talk to their benefits lawyer about what disclosure obligations might exist, which might include updating the summary plan description that's disclosed to the employees or the summary of benefits and coverage in case that's discussed there, making sure that they're meeting all those disclosure requirements. There are some employers that may decide that they want to exclude abortion services because it's just too complicated or they're too afraid of liability. In that case, they'll want to carefully review how the local courts, their district courts and circuit courts have interpreted the Pregnancy Discrimination Act, because some courts have determined that a medical plan has to cover abortion because it would be technical discrimination against someone who's pregnant, particularly in the case if the plan excludes coverage for abortion that endangers the life of the mother. So there's also that to consider for an employer that is considering excluding abortion under their plan. So there's really a lot there for employers that have multi-state operations to think about how they want to evaluate their plan document and coverages and services that they want to cover. I think the important thing is to start now and start soon, because employees are really already starting to ask questions about when this is going to be covered and when it's not.
Eric, thank you again so much for your time and all the insights you've provided today. To learn more about Eric's practice at Dickinson Wright, visit the firm's website at dickinsonwright.com. And remember to visit Lexis's Practical Guidance Research Solution to see some of the valuable articles on this topic and related ERISA issues. As a note, if you're enjoying these podcasts, please subscribe to the monthly labor and employment series you're listening to right now. Lexis is also offering a monthly practice-specific data privacy and cybersecurity series. Finally, we are continuing with our monthly rotating practice area podcast series as well. All of these practical guidance podcasts can be found through your favorite podcast provider. And remember, no matter your practice area, if you need practical guidance on how to proceed in your work, check out Lexis's Practical Guidance Research Solution, available now through Lexis. For more information, visit lexis.com. Thanks, and be well.